Okay, then. I have no financial relationships to disclose. My own involvement with medical solidarity work did begin when I arrived at medical school as a first-year student. The war in Vietnam was still on, and since I'd been active in the anti-war movement in college, when I got to Philadelphia in the fall of 1972, I started working with a local chapter of medical aid to Indochina. This letter to the New England Journal of Medicine highlights two important aspects of solidarity medicine. One is the conscious pursuit of a political objective as part of a solidarity or anti-war movement, here manifest as an expression of opposition to the continued air war being waged by our government, and to assist health services affected by the U.S. military campaign against its enemy. Now, within a few months of my arrival, Kissinger and Nixon had launched the Christmas bombing raids of the North, during which the major hospital in the North and its major teaching hospital, Bach Mai, was hit and partially destroyed. In response, Medical Aid for Indochina launched its Bach Mai Hospital emergency campaign to rebuild Bach Mai Hospital. The New England Journal published this editorial in which the journal's editor-in-chief, Franz Ingelfinger, not only quoted a visiting U.S. physician's account of the hospital's destruction, but he also endorsed the Medical Aid for Indochina campaign by concluding, quote, physicians for whom words of dismay or protest are not enough should be interested in the following letter in which a group of doctors proposes measures for the rebuilding of Bach Mai. My own activism consisted mostly of standing out on Locust Walk on the Penn campus with a collection box and engaging anyone who would talk to me about it. Now, the destruction of a hospital, as we've seen most recently in Kunduz, Afghanistan, is a clear violation of the principle of medical neutrality, which has been defined by four successive Geneva Conventions dating back to 1864 as the non-interference with medical services in times of armed conflict and civil unrest. As the Vietnam War was ending, however, repression and revolution were heating up in Central America, leading to the triumph of the Sandinista Revolution in Nicaragua in 1979. The Sandinista government embarked immediately on major campaigns in literacy and health, which brought the infant mortality rate down by 30%, an advance which was highly praised by UNICEF. But the revolutionary government's success at improving the health and welfare of the Nicaraguan population was intolerable to the Reagan administration, which feared, as Oxfam UK put it on this book cover, the threat of a good example, which could potentially weaken the U.S. grip on other countries within its sphere of influence. And so it launched the Contra War. The Contra War is an example of what has been called low-intensity conflict, whose goal is to convince the civilian population that they will never be safe if they support their revolutionary government and that the gains that were promised and delivered by that government will be destroyed. This led to the targeting of public health care facilities and workers. So documenting these abuses was an important means of exposing the nature of the war being waged by our government. An example is this paper, which appeared in The Lancet in 1985 by Dave Siegel, Bobby Barron, and Paul Epstein, The Epidemiology of Aggression, which documented a pattern of activity by the Contras that seriously violates principles of medical neutrality. Another example is this letter to the New York Times, Contra Violence Violates Medical Neutrality, signed, among others, by then APHA President Vic Seidel. Now, as Alice just described, in 2003, the Health and Humans Project, Health and Human Rights Project, was launched as a medical solidarity effort sponsored by American Jews for a Just Peace and Jewish Voice for Peace. We organized delegations to the region as well as visits by health professionals to the United States, including in the past APHA's annual meeting. Our partner organizations, as Alice mentioned, are Physicians for Human Rights Israel and the Palestinian Medical Relief Society. Our first delegation arrived in the region in June 2003, which was just as the Second Intifada was ending. We visited this field hospital maintained by Medical Relief in the old city of Nablus, which had been under siege and curfew for 100 days beginning in April 2002, with only 37 hours total when movement of the civilian population was allowed. It was difficult to care for patients as medical teams were being shot at and arrested. And anyone sick or wounded in this quarter of the city had only one option for treatment, which was this medical relief field hospital. No matter how serious the patient's condition, the Israeli occupation forces would not allow any passage of patients out of their quarter of the city. So a patient who was mortally wounded would either survive emergency care delivered by medical relief staff and volunteers in this converted guest house or die. The facility was ransacked by the Israeli military on three occasions in the 6 months prior to our June 2003 visit, most recently 2 weeks before we arrived. On departing, one Israeli soldier jammed his combat knife into the doorframe, which some medical relief staff took to be an attempt at intimidation. This young man named Taher is a medical relief volunteer. And he told me that on December 26, 2002, during the curfew, he had been visiting the home of an elderly cancer patient to dress a draining wound. On his way back to the field hospital, this was in broad daylight, he was arrested and incarcerated at the Hawara jail, where an Israeli soldier struck him in the face with his rifle butt, breaking his teeth, which you can't see in this picture because his mouth is closed. On his way back to the field, he was held for 15 days and was not allowed to call his family, who didn't know where he was. He was finally released without charges. IDF soldiers fired on this medical relief ambulance, striking it at least twice. One of these bullets struck a medical relief volunteer who was attending a patient within the ambulance, wounding him quite seriously. This photo is a view of the ambulance graveyard across the street from the Palestinian Red Crescent office in Albira in the spring of 2004. Medical Relief documented this list of violations of medical neutrality during the Second Intifada, including the killing of 25 health workers and the wounding of 425 while on duty, and 121 attacks on ambulances. On our January 2004 delegation, we visited Nablus in the northern West Bank, which was at that time under Israeli military closure. This meant that nobody was allowed into or out of the city. And at Hawara, which you see here, the major checkpoint south of Nablus, the Israeli military refused to allow our medical delegation to enter, despite the fact that I had identification as a physician and a letter from medical relief inviting me to see patients in one of their mobile clinics. This is an example, although it's trivial, of the violation of medical neutrality. With the help of Palestinian taxi drivers, who always seem to be well informed about the situation in real time, we were able to enter Nablus and participate in the mobile clinic, which is especially important during these times of closure when the passage of anyone, regardless of medical necessity, is forbidden by the military. The mobile clinic set up in a village cut off from Nablus by the military closure, where we saw patients with no other options for care. This child was going to need dental care very soon before pain and infection set in, but her family could not enter Nablus to get it treated. On leaving the village, the Israeli military refused to allow our ambulance to re-enter Nablus. Our driver got out with his hands up. You can see him right here. The picture is shot from the back seat of the ambulance with no luck. I noticed when he got out that he was wearing a leg brace, and I asked him about it, and he told me that several months before his ambulance had been stopped by the Israeli military, and as he was stepping out, a soldier had slammed the door on it and broke his lower leg. This boy is named Mohammed. I met him while seeing patients at the medical relief clinic in Sinjil village outside Ramallah in January 2004. At this time, he was 12 years old. He weighed about 24 kilos. He was blind and deaf and profoundly retarded as a result of severe birth asphyxia. When I asked his mother about his medical history, she told me that she had arrived at Calandia checkpoint in labor at term with her fourth child, but she was not allowed to pass, and she labored for 5 hours at the checkpoint and finally delivered him. He aspirated meconium, he was cyanotic, and it took 2 hours for an ambulance to be allowed to reach him and take him to Augusta Victoria Hospital in East Jerusalem, where he was resuscitated. She spends most of her time caring for him. The family spends about two-thirds of her husband's income of $320 a month caring for him. She carries him everywhere, and she has chronic back pain as a result. This story should be shocking, but it didn't surprise us, because the United Nations Population Fund told us that at this time that they had documented 56 episodes at least of pregnant women being refused passage at the checkpoint, at checkpoints, resulting in 19 maternal deaths and 26 neonatal deaths. In fact, UNFPA produced this documentary called Birth at the Checkpoint in an attempt to publicize the situation. Medical relief workers will often call PHR Israel in these cases to try to affect passage in real time. PHR Israel published this cartoon in an Israeli English language daily newspaper. Say, does she look, oops, I'm sorry. Say, does she look pregnant? No, just fat. More recently, during Operation Protective Edge, the Israeli military assault on Gaza in the summer of 2014, the UN reported that 17 of 32 hospitals had been damaged and 3 closed. 45 of 97 primary health centers were damaged, 17 closed, and 4 destroyed. An international group of activists, including Mads Gilbert, a Norwegian physician who was working in Gaza at the time, wrote this letter to The Lancet decrying the assault. Despite The Lancet's publishing numerous dissenting letters, advocates for the Israeli government policy have attempted to get The Lancet's editor fired. This pattern of Israeli violations of medical neutrality is being repeated during the current violence and repression taking place within Israel and the West Bank. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society has declared a state of emergency after attacks on its staff, here reporting that 5 paramedics were beaten up by soldiers in Jerusalem, an Israeli forces attacked an ambulance crew with batons in the Old City and severely beat another ambulance crew in Albira, wounding 2 paramedics. 2 weeks ago, the president of medical relief, Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, issued this statement denouncing intentional attacks by Israeli forces on Palestinian health professionals, noting that the Israelis' army of behavior does not respect the neutrality of medical professionals. I'm just about there. PHR Israel released this statement documenting over 40 cases of attacks on medical teams between October 2nd and 13th, 7 cases of physical assault of ambulance crews, 9 cases of shooting at ambulances, and 21 cases of delay and disruption of the work of medical professionals and ambulances. Last Tuesday, Amnesty International issued this press release reporting that in some cases the person shot was left bleeding to death on the ground and was not given proper medical assistance. So what we have seen is a systematic, repeated violation of medical neutrality by the Israeli military over many years, for which there can be no excuse. I'll conclude with this statement from the PHR Israel press release, which sums up the current situation and its underlying source. Quote, "Yet again, the escalation of violence erodes the protection granted to medical teams. These incidents do not happen in a vacuum. They are part of the routine of the military occupation of the Palestinian territories, which is the source of systematic violations of Palestinian rights, including the right to safe and timely health care." Thank you.